Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast. Another week, another podcast, another week of Mariners baseball, another week of me imploring you to build submarines. Buildsubmarines.com. I'm just kidding. There were very prominently displayed Build Submarines ads behind home plate at the Yankees game yesterday. It was pretty good. I implore MLB to explore a Tyler Rogers and Build Submarine collab. I think that would be good. And that's all I have to say about that. But welcome back. Thanks for tapping in. I got some stuff to talk about this week. Not an amazing week of Mariners baseball, but I don't think it was a bad week. I think within the context of the division, you could even call it a good week. Because the Mariners sit in first place still, and I'll talk about that in a second. More importantly, in their first 50 games, the Seattle Mariners won 27 of those games. Precisely a 54% win percentage. I mean, that is... I've never seen a baseball team this committed to the bit as the Seattle Mariners are, and it's just admirable. They could have won the series against the Yankees this week. They took the first two, and then they saw that, hey, if we just drop game three, it's a 54% win percentage. Let's do it for our man in the front office. Let's do it for Jerry DePoto. Let's prove him right. And they did it. Pretty astounding. And it's just phenomenal. I love it. With this episode, besides that, I'm going to talk about real quick some top prospect list updates that are gains for the Seattle Mariners. The lineup today was really interesting. I'll talk about that, where we're at in the standings. Who, again, checking in, who's still been good in May, who's still been bad in May. And then I'm just going to riff to end this episode. But I'm going to start with, as I said, the top 100 prospect updates. A couple different lists were updated. First of all, the Baseball America list was recently updated, and now six Mariners prospects have earned a spot in Baseball America's newest top 100 list. So Cole Young is at 37, Cole Emerson 39, Harry Ford at 51, Lazaro Montez at 83. All four of those guys were on it to begin the season. I think those are marginal gains within the list, though. But they were already on the top 100 preseason. But the new additions at 98 and 100, respectively, are Tyler Locklear, the third base / first baseman, who's been just raking in Arkansas last year and this year. And then Johnny Farmello just got added as number 100 on this list, the outfielder who is currently with the Modesto Nuts, one of the three high school draftees from the Seattle Mariners last year. I don't know. I was going to say the lesser of the three, but I don't think that's fair. I think Colt Emerson has clearly emerged as the number one of those three, but between Ty Pete and Johnny Farmello, they both offer some interesting looks. But he's been hitting pretty well down there. I think I talked about him on that minor league update episode a couple weeks ago. But good to see him on another list here. And I should say Colt Emerson is hurt again, which sucks. He's going to end up missing like a lot of the first part of the season, which really sucks for not only just his development in the org, but just for him. I mean, he's playing really well. You want to keep playing well and like make it up to Everett as quick as possible. I mean, if he played a month and a half, maybe 2 months, 6 weeks-ish of like what he was doing to start the season this year, they probably promote him immediately. But that was the Baseball America update. And then the official MLB pipeline update as well. We saw Cole Young go up to number 28, Harry Ford number 29. I actually don't think these have changed. And Colt Emerson at 51. I think those were the same as to start the season. But Lazaro Montez jumped into the top 100 to 85 here. I think he is finally starting to be on more people's radars as a top prospect. I'm not going to toot my own horn because other people said this, but last year, preseason last year, around that time, the Mariners kind of had depleted their like top 100 list worth prospects. They had Harry Ford on there, and like Jonathan Classe showed up on some lists. And like Cole Young was there, but wasn't this highly ranked. And I tweeted something that I was like, they have a lot of depth outside of the top 100. Like, I think if they did a 2023 top 200 before the season, I think the Mariners would have had like seven guys on here. A lot of the names I just read, And this year we're seeing those guys jump into these top 100 lists. I think Lazaro was one of them. I think Tyler Locklear was one of them as well. Cole Young has jumped up considerably. And then, like, the new draftees, like Cole Emerson are here and Johnny Farmello, which is really cool to see. But it's huge for a guy like Lazaro to finally be on these lists. He has just turned a lot of heads this year, especially with a cut and strikeout rate, which is huge. And he hasn't stopped raking. So that is just massive. And then looking, like, it's crazy to see this list and compare this to, like, 5 years ago. Where the Mariners, I think 5 years ago, probably had like, what, four or five top prospects on there. I think Julio would have been on there after they traded for Kelnick. He would have been on there, but then it was mostly pitchers. I mean, you had Emerson Hancock, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert all on there. And now it's bats. It's shortstop, catcher, outfield, third base, outfield on these lists. It's pretty astounding the flip they've made in the organization. And the strides that they've made in the minors to develop hitting. I think there's been criticism from a lot of people, from me included, on their development of hitting. Some of that manifesting itself in just like the acquisitions they've made at the big league level, in terms of those like developments, where like you get Colton Wong and he dies, you get Jesse Winker and he dies, even like Jorge Polanco looks a little dead this year, that type of thing. But they hadn't had a bunch of top hitting prospects come through the system besides Julio, and then Kelnick didn't pan out. And Julio just, I don't know how much of that was a development thing for them or how much of it was literally just him being insanely gifted and talented at the sport of baseball. So they haven't really had, I don't think in my lifetime they've had this many top hitting prospects. Like, it reminds me of like a decade ago when they had like Dustin Ackley and Kyle Seager in the system, and Kyle Seager ended up obviously having a wonderful career. Dustin Ackley did not, but I don't know if I've seen this much hitting talent in the minors, and I think this is a good thing. I think having more guys on the top 100 not only means a consensus slash validation of what you're doing with these guys in the org, but also it instantly ups their trade value, like looking at these guys from a improving the big league club standpoint. Being able to point to a guy like even Johnny Farmello now, Tyler Locklear, Lazaro, even just being able to point to a guy and saying, look, he's in like three top 100 lists, as well as you have your own scouting report on him, we have our own scouting report on him, you can get more for that guy, or that guy can get you more back. And so I think that's important. I think that's important as the Mariners hopefully look to contend. I think there's been some trade chatter recently where I think Ryan Divish was on a podcast and said he wouldn't be surprised if they traded Harry Ford at the deadline this year. And I would be totally willing to trade Harry Ford as long as the return is something good. There's been Vlad Guerrero trade chatter too, because I think it was Bleacher Report had their top 10 destinations list, which I always think are kind of bullshit. The Mariners were number one on that list, and everyone was like, no, we're good. I don't think I'd trade Harry Ford for Vlad Guerrero Jr. I don't know about that, because I don't know if I believe in Vlad Guerrero Jr. I don't know if I believe the Mariners can turn Vlad Guerrero Jr. around at this point. But I would trade Cole Young. I would trade Harry Ford. I would trade Logan Evans. I would trade a lot of guys for quality in return. It would have to be a good return, but I'm not a prospect clutcher by any means. I think I would even trade like Tyler Locklear if they're not going to call him up this year. But the guys I would try to hold on to probably are Cole Emerson, because Cole Emerson really does look like a potential franchise cornerstone shortstop, more so than even Cole Young. And then Lazaro just kind of looks like a potential hitting unicorn, similar to like Jordan Alvarez, like everyone has talked about. I feel like those are the guys I would really try to hold on to here. And like Felnin, you're not trading Felnin. I think those are the three that I'd be like coveting more. But I think like Cole Young and Harry Ford are both in or right around the top 50 on everyone's lists, and I think they could get you a good return before or at the deadline. I would be willing to trade those guys. I absolutely would. Harry Ford, hitting wise, he looks phenomenal. I think he probably will end up moving to second base or a corner outfield spot rather than catch. But I don't think that really diminishes his value considering how athletic the guy is and how good of a hitter he's proven to be at the minors in terms of power, approach, bat-to-ball skills, and like he has a lot of speed, just athletic as hell. And then Cole Young, I feel long-term may not be a shortstop and might be a second baseman while he adds more power like he has last year. I would still just be willing to trade him. He's farther along in development, theoretically, than Colt Emerson. But if I'm going to trade one of those guys, I'm going to trade Cole Young. I think he'll get a decent return. I'm not a prospect clutcher. I think the team right now has the bones to be a deep playoff contender with another bat or two. I feel like I've said that for two straight years. But either of those guys in a trade for Vlad Guerrero Jr., I don't know about that one. I'm a little skeptical on that. Now, Bo Bichette, we have a different conversation if we're talking Bo Bichette. But, yeah, I think I pointed to, as we were watching the Yankees games the other day, like Soto just hit two home runs yesterday, and I brought up the Jared Kelnick-Soto chatter that I talked about this offseason that people on Twitter, I was so mad because I think people overvalue these prospects and young guys. I mean, Kelnick, we saw him not pan out at the big league level. I see guys who are like, no, don't trade any of these top 100 guys. It's like, how do you expect the team to get better? You can't just call these guys up and expect them to be really good major leaguers. It's so difficult to make that jump. None of these guys are even in AAA. Like, Tyler Locklear is the closest one, him and Cole Young and Harry Ford. Those are the closest guys, and even they are probably still a decent way away from really impacting the major league level. I get wanting to hold on to guys you feel an affinity for. Like, I don't want to lose Harry Ford or Cole Young. I like both of those fellas, but I do want to win now. And if they can get a good bat or two and or like a good bullpen arm along with in a package for either both those guys, I don't know. I would trade them is my point. I'm not going to try to hold on to what the future of those guys might look like. Especially when, like, look, they have more talent coming through the system. I think they still have plenty of, like, next 100 guys after this 100. I think they are clearly doing something right, at least in the lower minors, to develop these bats. So that's my two cents on trading these guys. I would absolutely be open to trading them. It just, again, it needs to be for, like, a real impact player, like not necessarily Vlad Guerrero. I'd consider Pete Alonso, but like Harry Ford, Cole Young, Logan Evans, Emerson Hancock for Kyle Tucker. Yeah, I would do that trade in a heartbeat right now. I would absolutely do that. And then one other guy, Phil Nesselestin. I think is it too cavalier to say that he could land in like the top 10 of prospect lists to start next season? Like, is it too much to make that claim here? Oh my God. I've seen some scouts raving about him. To start his pro career, he's now played 12 games in the complex league. That's 49 at bats. He's hitting 367, 475, 592. That's a 1,067 OPS, 2 home runs, 11 RBIs, 10 walks, and 10 strikeouts, 3 stolen bases, a triple, 3 doubles. I haven't heard like much about his defense, but if I think that's the big thing. If scouts come at the end of this season, if the bat continues as it has, if let's say he gets up to Modesto, makes his like minor league technically Modesto debut for low A, continues hitting well, and the defense looks good from a scout perspective, that is a, I think, at least top 50 guy going into next season. I mean, he was the, what, number 3 overall guy in the international class this year? So I don't know if it's too aggressive to say he could be in the top 10. I mean, if he continues like this, it'll be interesting to see. I just think by the time next season, the Mariners are going to have him at least one more guy in the top 100. And then there's a lot of other fringe guys' talent. So there's a lot of talent in the minors, which is exciting. But that is my spiel on the minor leagues. Now, the Mariners, the big league club, the Seattle Baseball Mariners, what have they been doing? I left last week's episode quite scared about the upcoming road trip to the Orioles and the Yankees and the Nationals this weekend, but we've seen the seven games against the AL East, and spoiler alert, the AL East is good. The AL East is good at baseball. I wouldn't call this a loss, like an L of a week, though. They lost 2 of 3 to the Orioles, and they split the series 2 of 4 against the Yankees. Those are probably your two best teams in the AL. Maybe you can throw the Guardians in there. But I think those are probably the two best teams in the AL, two of the best teams in the league. You get 3 of 7 from those. That's not a loss. On the road, too, I think that's fine. I think that's a fine result. I don't know if anyone expected more than that. It would have been nice to win 3 or 4 from the Yankees after starting 2-0, but the Orioles series was tough. The game on Sunday, I think they should have won that game, but they got trounced on Friday. Won a close one Saturday and then lost a pretty close one Sunday. And then the Yankees, they got Soto'd and judged on Wednesday. And then today it was just an awful offensive effort. Stanton homered, Judge homered. They got a couple other runs here and there, but the Mariners got blanked, I think, for the second time this season, which stinks. But just a feeble offense today against Luis Gil, who, to his credit, has been really good this year. But they got outpitched by the Yankees today, which stinks. But it was huge to win those first two. Again, I think this is a win. I think, again, in the context of the division, so they take 3 of 7 from the AL East. The Phillies just swept the Rangers, and the Astros have been winning more, but they didn't go on an absolute torrid pace this week. So the Mariners are 3 games up of the division, which I don't have it in front of me, and I should have gotten it in front of me, but it's the first time they've been 3 games up this late, like in May, and this late in May since like the 90s or something like that, or like 2002, 3, I don't know. It's a long time, couple decades. They have not been in first this late in the year that many times in their life as a franchise. That's a young franchise and hasn't had much success. So this, it's huge that they're here right now. Are they 3 games up? Am I lying to you? Let me double check the standings. They are. Yeah, they're still 3 games up. They're 27-24, 3 games up because the Rangers, again, they just got swept. They're on an L4. The Astros lost yesterday. They're 4.5 back. They're closer. They're getting closer. They're ever looming. And then the Angels and the A's are far in the rearview mirror at this point. But that's why I think this is a win. You take 3 of 7 from two of the best teams in the league. Oh, I should have given credit to the Royals. They're probably the other best team in the AL right now, which is crazy. But you take 3 of 7 from two good teams, and the Rangers have a bad week, and you're still 3 games up, and it's May 23rd, which is crazy. And I wanted to kind of compare it to last season, but real quick, today's lineup on May 23rd was J.P. Crawford, Dylan Moore, Luke Rayleigh, Mitch Garver is 1 through 4, Dominic Canzone, and then Julio in the 6th spot, Josh Rojas 7th, and then Ty France and Sebi Savala. If you told me at the start of the year that that was the lineup against the New York Yankees on May 23rd, I would guess they're in deep third, they're 3 or 4 games under 500, but no, they're in fact 3 games ahead in first place with that lineup, and Dylan Moore and Luke Rayleigh have been cooking in May, especially against the Yankees most recently. They had Dylan Moore and Rayleigh have been awesome. They had tough games today, but everyone had a tough game at the plate today. But yeah, I just can't believe we're here in May, and everyone saw that lineup and was like, yeah, that actually makes sense. Julio probably should be not hitting second anymore at his current state. Crazy. Actually ridiculous. And then, like, making me feel better about this year is looking at the standings at this time last season. So on May 23rd last season, the Mariners were 500, 24-24. Oh, my God, the A's were 10-40. Jesus. The Mariners were 24-24 in fourth place behind the 27-23 Angels, the 28-20 Astros, and the 30-18 Rangers. They were 6 games back of first at 500 at the same time last year as right now. And right now they're 27-23, 3 games up. The Rangers are 24-26. The Astros are 22-28. That makes me feel good. They've simultaneously not dug themselves into a hole. They've given themselves a little above 500 cushion, which for once in their life is helping them early in the season. And then the Rangers and the Astros have been scuffling. I read the wrong standings. 27-24. The Rangers are 24-27. The Astros are, 23-28? Still, that is it's making me feel better about things, just looking at the standings. And at this point last season, it was like, ah, geez, we're so far out. And then they made that run, and they didn't quite get there. So they have a late run again this year, but they start in first place and just distance themselves more. I mean, come on, that would be amazing. But we're looking too far ahead. Who and why have the Mariners been doing well in May? I talked about a couple of these guys last week, and I'll just reiterate how good Dylan Moore and Luke Raley have been in May. They both have over 200 WRC pluses. Luke Raley's is 211. Dylan Moore's is 201. That is over 100% better than league average. Luke Raley with 4 home runs this month. Dylan Moore with 5. He hit 2 against the Yankees, and he was basically the reason we won that game a couple days ago. And they both have below average K rates. Dylan Moore is 11% walk rate. Luke Raley is a 5%, which is below average too, but he's just been swinging it. What's even more impressive, I think, Luke Raley has a 436 BABIP, so you can just factor in that's pretty unsustainable. So he's going to regress a little bit. He already kind of has been. But Dylan Moore has a 318 BABIP. And he is slashing 306, 397, 677 in 19 games in May. That is very sustainable. That is a very sustainable BABIP for Dylan Moore. He's been hitting the ball really hard. He looks settled up there at the plate. Like, his at-bats have been phenomenal. He just is putting barrel on the ball. And I looked at that BABIP. I was expecting it to be way higher just given his numbers this month, but no, it has not been. And his league average, not his league average, his like average BABIP in his career is like 290-ish. So he's right around there, like 20 points higher than his average BABIP was just something you need to contextualize there. And that's huge. He's a 149 WRC plus all year. He's an everyday player for the Seattle Mariners right now, and they've needed it. With like Julio scuffling, Josh Rojas has fallen down to earth. Jorge Polanco was hurt and has been terrible. Haniger has been bad. Garver's been good this month. Garver's been pretty solid this month. Cal has been steadily probably the best player on this team all year from both sides of the ball perspective. But God, Dylan Moore, just the impact he's had has been massive. It's him and Luke Raley should be credited. The most. Him, Luke Raley, and Cal should be given a lot of the credit here for being 3 games up in the month of May. Because the pitching has also come down to earth after an otherworldly month of April. The starters have been meh, I guess. The last two Luis Castillo starts have both been not going supremely deep into the game, not having his best whiff stuff. But still, like, not giving up more than 2 runs. Like, today's, I think he went, 5 innings. He gave up, like, 2 hits, but 3 walks, 2 runs, 2 strikeouts. But the offense didn't do anything to support him, but that's still not, like, an awful start. So he's been fine this month. He hasn't looked very crisp in the command department, but he's a consummate professional. He'll give you at least 5 innings. And Brian Wu has looked phenomenal recently. His start against the Yankees the other day was awesome. His fastball was gorgeous. Again, that's his strongest pitch. He was using it a lot. The thing that stood out is he was putting it precisely where Kyle Raleigh had his glove. If he can locate that fastball, like, it's going to be one of the best fastballs in the league. It already is probably grading out wise, one of the best fastballs of any starter in the league. Just the shape of it, the action, and with the command, it's beautiful. His slider looked fine that day, but his sinker, I think, was maybe the best I've ever seen it look in his young career, which is huge. I think that's going to be a massive pitch for him this year, along with that like cutter, gyro, slider. But he's looked great. Ridiculous that they can just add him into an already insanely good rotation. Kirby has looked fine. He's gotten dinged by some batted balls and just being too in the zone a little bit this month. But that's going to happen for him, like I've talked about. I think he's gotten a little unlucky with home runs this month, but I think he'll be fine. Gilbert has looked not as good this month as he did in the first 5 weeks of the season. I think not. He hasn't been missing bats quite as much either, but has played to, you know, played some good offenses recently. And then Bryce Miller, same thing with Logan, just not really missing bats, leaving too much in the middle of the plate. Bryce Miller's start against the Yankees yesterday was not great. He missed like no bats, not fooling them at all with the secondary stuff. His fastball is very good when he can locate it a little bit, but he still needs some secondary stuff to go along with it. Because guys, no matter how good your fastball is, if it's not Mason Miller's, they will sit on that and wait for it to be in the zone. And they didn't miss his pitches like at all. He not only whiff rates in his start yesterday, it was like zone contact. They weren't missing his pitches in the zone, and they weren't really chasing his pitches out of the zone too. So he wasn't fooling them. I think it was part sequencing, part the Yankees offense is just a really good offense, and part he just didn't really have it, so he scuffed a little bit this month. And then everyone in the bullpen has not been great in May except for Andres Munoz. In May has pitched 9 1/3 innings, 5 saves, 12.5 K per 9, 100% left on base percentage, which is nasty. That's nasty work. 0.96 ERA, 2.06 FIP, has just been awesome this month, and has had multiple 4- and 5-out saves this month too. He's been needing to come in the 8th to put out a fire and then close the game down in the 9th, and he's done so. The first game against the Yankees was, he pitched back-to-back games against the Yankees and basically won the Mariners those games in the late innings. He's been awesome. It's been really encouraging for the long-term view, my view at least, of this bullpen and its health. But speaking of health, they need another bullpen. They need probably two more solid bullpen arms. I think they need one just in middle relief that they can rely on to throw innings for them, who's not going to be quite as bad as, like, let's say Cody Bolton or like Austin Voth have been. But they need a back of the bullpen arm. They need a Matt Brash to go along with Andres Munoz, because he cannot keep throwing back-to-back 5-out saves every week if they expect him to be good late in the year. They've needed it for sure. I think they're still going to need it until they actually get the bullpen they want. But I'm worried a little bit. He throws really hard. He's had injury troubles in the past. They need at least one more back of the bullpen guy they can trust, not only to get outs, but to just kind of limit his usage so early on in the season. But he's been awesome. He's looked every bit as dominant Andres Munoz as we've seen him, which early on in the year, I was doubting it a little bit. His stuff looked down. He didn't look quite as dominant, but he's been great. His fastball's had a lot of life, but the biggest thing for him is the slider and the location. It's been perfect, really. Honestly, it's been perfect. He's not really leaving them in the zone much. If he can just put that precisely where he wants below the zone, that's perfect. Everyone else has struggled. Trent Thornton has struggled. Ryan Stanek has struggled. Voth struggled. Bizzardo, in the very short amount of time he's been up, struggled. Cody Bolton just got sent down. He was awful. After Gabe Spires' first like 4 weeks of being the best reliever in baseball, he has crashed down to earth. Taylor Saucedo is still hurt. Kirby Sneed, after his strong start, hasn't looked great. I don't know if I'm worried about Gabe Spire. He's been walking a lot more guys recently, but he was also hurt and not pitching as much. I'm worried a little bit about the bullpen. But they did just trade for a man in the bullpen. Mike Bauman, not the Fangraphs writer. Is he Fangraphs? Did I get that right? Yeah, I'm right. He's a Fangraphs writer. They traded, and this was after yesterday's game, funny enough, when Cody Bolton got destroyed. They traded for Mike Bauman from the Orioles, sent Cody Bolton down. We saw Mike Bauman today, not a tremendously good debut, but it didn't matter in the grand scheme because the offense didn't score any runs. But Mike Bauman, before this trade, I knew a little bit about, wow, that was not even a tongue twister. I just can't talk today. I knew a little bit about him before this trade, but after just doing a short little delve into his stats, I think he's going to probably be a useful, like what I talked about, a useful middle reliever. I don't know if he's going to be out and out stopper, seventh, eighth inning guy. But I think he's going to be better than Eduardo Pizzardo and Cody Bolton, which is just, you know, low-ish bar, but I think he's going to be better than them. He offers something a little different out of the pen than maybe your typical reliever. Not a great fastball on him, but his breaking stuff is his bread and butter. His slider, and I think he throws a knuckle curve, are his two best pitches. He'll throw them a lot of the time. He's about 42% fastball this year, 28% knuckle curve, 22% slider with a changeup mixed in, just for some variety in there. But he has been really good at missing bats, which makes sense. His fastball gets hit pretty hard, but his slider and his curveball are very good at both missing bats and just generating soft contact as well. So he's going to offer something a little bit different than like just your flamethrower out of the pen, but I think at the very least he's going to be useful. They got him as well as a catcher named Michael Perez. Don't know anything about him. Looked at his scout grades. Looks like a Sebi Savala type, where offensively probably offers you nothing. Surprisingly athletic, apparently, for a catcher, but he offers more defense than value at the plate, I think, and he'll just be organizational depth in AAA probably, as it looks like they're just sticking by Sebi Savala right now as backup, which I don't necessarily disagree with. They traded Blake Hunt for this package of Bauman and Perez, and really it's like Blake Hunt for Bauman. I think they just needed a catcher to replace Blake Hunt at the AAA level, so Michael Perez got thrown in. But Blake Hunt, he was, I think I talked about him not maybe in the preview, but recently when Sebi Savala was so awful at the plate and this guy was just raking in AAA, which he hadn't been, like, he won 21 WRC plus in AAA this year. Like, that is fine, but for the PCL, that's like, it's like league average, basically. I mean, I know it's weighted against league average, but you should rake in the PCL if you're close to major league level. And I don't know if he offers a whole lot defensively. I think he's more of a hit first catcher, DH potential type with a plus catcher arm. I didn't know much about him. I thought we might see him this year if Sebi Savala continued to be awful. But again, it seems like they're going to stick by Sebi. And they basically turned, I think Blake Hunt they got in the, was it the Caballero trade? I know they got him from the Rays as a fringy top 30 prospect guy. And now he's on the Orioles for probably a guy who's going to throw a decent amount of innings for the Mariners out of the bullpen this year. So I would call that a W. And then just to touch on Sebi Savala, again, he's been so bad offensively, like really bad, really bad. But if they're just looking at him as a purely defensive catcher as a backup, that's fine. You know what? It's fine. You can't all have a Travis d'Arnaud as your backup catcher. You know, sometimes you just need a guy who can catch your pitching staff well. And I think he is grading out fine back there as a backup catcher. So Sebi Savala, officially, he's my backup catcher, baby. I will put all my support behind him. But that was the trade they made. Again, Mike Bauman, we saw him today. We'll see him more. I still think there is not only another trade. We know there's going to be another trade. This man, Jerry, he's just an absolute sicko for trades. We know there's going to be another trade for a reliever, I think. I think this is not the only reliever he will acquire. I think as the next 3 weeks come into shape and we get into the middle of June, we'll really see potentially what relievers might be available for trade and what would be attainable for the Seattle Mariners to acquire. But it's Mike Bauman for now is the acquisition. So welcome to the team, Mike Bauman, not the Fangraphs writer. Again, I repeat, not a writer, a professional baseball player. So, and I'm done talking about the team. I don't want to talk about Julio. I'm going to give him another week. It's just been really frustrating. I tweeted when I saw the list of Vlad Guerrero destinations and the Mariners at the top, I tweeted a quote that was like, the Mariners already have a guy who hits the ball really hard into the ground in Julio, and they do. He's continued to do that. He is slugging, I think after today, like 315, which is, I think it's like 20th to last in the league of qualified hitters, which is really bad. That's really bad. He's striking out slightly less this month, which is good, but still, do I need to just scream? Does everyone need to scream it from the rooftops every week? Pull side power, pull side fly balls, Julio. Not even pull side power. We know if he hits the ball, he's hitting it hard. Pull side fly balls, please, sir. I beg you. I'm starving over here for an extra base hit from you, Julio. Please. Oh, it's so frustrating. But that's it for the team. I have one short thing to talk about to end this episode, and then we're just gonna get out of here for the week and enjoy the rest of Mariners baseball going into next week. But my one last thing. I think about this often. I think I've talked about it on the podcast. You know, I forget all the things I say. I've said so much pointless and stupid things these past few years. But thinking about, like, team building and how the Mariners have arrived here at an elite pitching staff with a subpar offense and how, you know, some of that could be helped with more investment from the owners in free agency for bats. It's no guarantee, obviously. Free agency is the worst way to build a team. Like, the most optimal way to build a team is through development of draftees, international signings, you know, waiver pickups, rule fives, like getting cheaply developed guys. And then, you know, you sign some free agents, and if they don't pan out, well, you got some good ones at home. And right now, at least the Mariners, like I talked about earlier, are looking like they can kind of develop bats, maybe better than they have been. So I think maybe the future is bright for the organization in terms of just young impact bats that they haven't really had since Julio came up, really, and Cal Raleigh. But those guys made their debuts, it feels like a long time ago now. And I'm worried that those guys, like Colt Emerson and Lazaro and Felman Celeste, and he's so far off the major league level, Johnny Farmello, like these type of guys are going to come up and miss the window of the elite pitching staff that they currently have. Pitching health is no guarantee ever. These pitchers are locked up. I think Castillo's, what, 2026? Like, I think they have at least 2 years, theoretically, of this same exact starting five. But again, it's no guarantee in both health and just performance. Like, these guys, the younger guys, like, besides Castillo, theoretically should stay the same or get better, but that's not a guarantee. Castillo is getting older. It's no guarantee that he continues being an elite pitcher anymore. And I'm worried that those guys are going to come up and kind of miss the elite starting pitching window that we've seen from this team. And I was thinking about just building a team based on offense or defense. And the thing about building a really good pitching staff is I think it's generally a worse option. I think it's the worst option compared to building an elite lineup. I very much appreciate the pitching staff the Mariners have built. I love watching pitching. I'm not going to complain about that at all. I love watching these starters work. Like, it's so enjoyable to get to watch these guys pitch. But when facing like great offenses like we saw this week, such as the Orioles or the Yankees or even the Rangers, we saw them last year, you can't expect them to all like pitch shutouts against these teams. And we saw it this week. There were some good outings. There were some bad outings from your great pitching staff. And that's just going to happen against really good offenses. If you like, if they give you a quality start against such a really talented lineup, like, that's a win, because your offense should be able to score 3+ runs against those teams because their pitching staffs are not necessarily as elite as their offenses, right? Real quick, I want to bring up something I tweeted out before Wednesday's game. Some just like the Mariners are like their winning percentage when they score like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6+ runs, and when they give up like 4-3 or less. But the biggest one here, when they score 3 or more runs, they're 25-7 this year. When they score 4 or more, 22-3. When they score 5 or more, they're 16-1. When they score 6 or more, they're 10-0. So the 3 runs is huge. When they score 2 or less, they're 2-15. So they score 3 runs and they're sporting, what even is that? What even is, what is 25-7? What winning percentage is that? Let's see. That's a 78% win percentage. So, like, listen, it doesn't take much to score and to win games with this elite pitching staff, but I digress. Like, these pitching staffs they saw against the Orioles and Yankees, I was saying they should be able to put up 3+ runs against these guys. They're not as good as the Mariners pitching staff. They haven't, I mean, they've kind of done that. They haven't done that. Their offense is still just like kind of meh. Like, the key to my original point of building an elite offense is a better option. I think it's a better option because of simple facts of life here. You can always score more runs. You simply cannot take runs away after you've given them up. No matter how good your pitchers are, they can't yoink runs back from the team they gave them up to. So if your great pitcher has a bad outing, which every great pitcher tends to have from time to time, you can't get those runs back. You can't. Your offense can, however, score more runs than the opponent at any given time. I know, crazy concept. There's always more to add. There's never an option to take away. So I think that's just the major flaw of the Mariners that I've probably talked about a decent amount. And it's this lack of margin for error. If you build an elite offense, you're giving a bigger margin of error to your entire team because you can always add more runs. If you build an elite pitching staff with a mid offense, particularly that is reliant on like a couple of guys, i.e. like the Mariners with Julio, it leaves a lot of variance to be determined in your outcomes and plenty of risk that you just aren't mitigating. So obviously the goal should be to have a good pitching staff and a good lineup. I think the goal should be to just be good at scoring runs and not allowing them. Like, I know, wild. No one's ever heard of that one before. It's impossible to do that. But that's my 2 cents on offense versus defense. I just think if you're going to do it, try to build an elite offense. But, you know, then you can take into account, like, the Mariners have built this elite pitching staff. It's not only a really good staff in a vacuum. Pitching 81 games at T-Mobile Park in Seattle just supercharges that elite pitching staff that much more. So they've gone to one extreme and it's worked. Like, they've been good the past couple years, you know. Like, it's not that you can't succeed without a good pitching staff. I just think it is, you know, again, you can't take runs away. And that is my last point of the day. Imagine a very fun rule that would really favor the Mariners. Something the pitchers can do to take away a run from the other team or runs. Like, what would it be? Like, if you strike out the side, that's a -1. from the other team. Like, Luis Castillo gives up a home run to Aaron Judge, but he strikes out the next three batters. Minus one, that home run counts for Aaron Judge, but it doesn't count for that game or something like that. And it, like, detracts from their ERA. Imagine that. That would be fun as hell. But that, I think that should be a rule, particularly because it would favor the Mariners, but I think that'd be interesting. What else could the MLB implement to, like, have a pitching staff be able to take runs away from the offense? I don't know. I'll think about it for next week too, because I think it's a fun hypothetical rule to have, and that would negate my entire argument. But that being said, I'm going to wrap this episode up with their schedule. They finish their road trip on the East Coast. They go to the Nationals. They play three games against them this weekend. This episode comes out on the Friday. They're starting that series, and then they come back home to play back-to-back series against the Astros and the Angels. And the Astros' four-game series at home to end the month, that is a massive series. That is an opportunity for the Mariners to kick the Astros' teeth in at home and further separate themselves from them in the division. I think that series at home, I think you need to take 2 of 4 at the very least. You can't lose that series to the Astros at home at a time like this when they're in first place. And they will, no matter what, by the time that series happens, will be in first place. Even if the Rangers win 3 straight and the Mariners lose 3 straight, they'd still be tied for first. So you're going to go into that series with at least a share of first place, with the Astros behind by at least 2 games, or at least 1 game potentially. And I just think they're going to need to kick the Astros while they're down. It's going to be a must-win series, I think. But let's hope they do that, and I will see you next Friday. Thanks for listening. Have a good rest of your week, and of course, go Mariners.